You're listening to the Gold Squadron Podcast, your home for X-Wing discussion, strategy, and entertainment.
Hello, this is Dio Morales, and I am here with Ryan Farmer.
Hey.
Chris Allen.
Yo.
And Travis Johnson.
Ni hao.
Today, we will be introducing you to an exciting project that we've been working on for quite a few months here. This new X-Wing miniatures alternate format has been thoroughly tested, and we're ready for the X-Men community to start playing. We're going to start today by telling you why we created the format and the goals we hope to achieve with it.
We had a couple goals setting out because we started testing in, I actually went back and checked because I had lost track. We started in August, early August, when the Nim Miranda two ship kite never engage meta was at its maximum and everyone was really unhappy with it basically. So we set out to give people a reason to engage their opponent that isn't, well, I feel like I should chase him, even though it's probably a bad idea, or he has more final salvo dice than I do. So, basically it was, all right, let's put something on the board that says you should fight your opponent under these terms so that, you know, Nim isn't just three bank boosting, TLTing things, dropping bombs the entire time. And you know, some of these jousty ships that people really want to see being good, like the X-Wings, the B-Wings, the TIE Fighters, can roll in and have something meaningful to do. Like if you can occupy space that gives you points for being there, then suddenly those arcs are very scary. Some of the other goals were, you know, discouraging point fortressing. So sure, you can have your 52 point Miranda, that's great, but if I only need to score 50 objective points and kill your other two ships and you win with, or I win and you still have Miranda on the board, you know, that's great. Your Miranda still maybe did some work, but you don't win by default just because you have Miranda left and I don't have enough left to kill Miranda at the end of the game. And that's not just Miranda. It's really every, you know, large points fortress, like your Fat Hans, your Nims. Kylo now, for instance, really can kind of struggle in this format because he just doesn't get enough work done when it's just him left. Really all these point fortresses in general. And really the main last one is letting people trade positioning and like ship count for points. So when you have, you know, say 70 points and you need 100 to win and you think, okay, I have three B-Wings and they're all on fire and they're all going to die. But if I can hold the objective for three turns before they do, then I win. Then now suddenly you've made the decision making much more complicated. It's not as simple as time's going to end in three rounds. How do I be ahead of points at that point? You can influence that point count by doing things that are outside of the standard killing ships.
The original kind of concept was the group of podcasters and a few other influential members of the community kind of came together and decided that, you know, Imperial Assault has missions and objective-based game scenarios where it's not just kill everybody on the other team and wipe them out. And we had discussed early on that even though a lot of Imperial Assault matches end up resulting in all the other guys are dead, the objectives themselves force engagements. They make the game quicker and they create an alternative way of thinking. And my favorite thing about the objective format that we've created is that it really allows, on the whole, amazing squad diversifying. And I think that under this format that we've created, tons and tons of more ships and options are available that, you know, weren't always. Well, that wasn't always true. The way we have the objective set up is that even like just running two ships might be fine in some objectives, but can be really bad in other ones. And you may have a squad that may not exactly be able to kill other, you know, the entire other squad, right? Like if you're playing the standard 200.6 obstacles format, then, you know, sometimes it's hard to build a squad that must kill the entire other team. But in this format, you can have a squad where, like you said, Chris, 56-point Miranda could still be on the board, and you could still win that game with only 20 points of, or you know, 24 points of your own ships on the board because of the objectives. When I was going through testing, I had many situations where in a standard format game, I just would have been dumpstered, and I would have lost without a doubt. But because I was able to control objectives and have an alternative win condition than just destroy the entire other team, my squad was able to pull through. And that's where I think this format that we've created really shines, is that, you know, there, what might be a top squad in one objective may not be the top squad in all objectives. And because of that, every game is a lot closer.
Another viewpoint that we went about designing this is for use for not only casual play, but we actually have made it so that you can be used competitively as well. Now, if you like to play casual night, you're like, hey, I want to play one game of objectives, you and your friend are going to have a great time. You pick a random objective out of the set, you play, you have a good time. Or you can even use this in a tournament format, which we've tested and used. We've already run one here in Chicago. Crate Cup is going to be integrating the objectives format into their tournament already.
We ran a full league of it in SoCal.
Yeah, we ran four leagues over here with it. A huge amount of test data. I've been really happy that everyone's frankly willing to go along with us and let us try science with them.
I really want to impart that there has been a lot of work and testing that have gone into this. We've actively tried to break these objectives many times. We've come up with lots of tweaks. Like, obviously, there will be tweaks that continue on in the future. But the fact, like you said, Dion, that we've really made this as an alternative competitive option is something like Aturi Cluster is amazing. Like, there are a lot of like alternative casual options. But because this is something you could run a tournament with that we've, you know, with TOs and everything, I think that it can be really fun to kind of rejuvenate your local X-Wing scene.
The thing that it balances there, if you have a friend who's maybe a little bit more into X-Wing and the meta and you're not, and you like to play, three B-Wings, an X-Wing, and a Z-95, that list is actually pretty good in this format.
Really is. Yeah, absolutely.
And then on top of that, it uses, we decided we weren't going to change the mechanics of the game. You know, the best thing that we love about X-Wing is the fact that you're able to assign a maneuver. You hope that you selected correctly, and the excitement of flipping maneuvers and putting ships in places is the reason why we love the game. You know, of course, people like Star Wars too, but that mechanic is what really drove this game to its current success.
Before we begin, though, other thing I'd like to add is we intend this specific episode, whoever's podcast you're listening it on, to be a reference for you in the future. We're doing our best not to date this. So you could listen, hopefully, this in the 6 months, a year, a year and a half in the future, and it'll still be very relevant. We're kind of using kind of vague examples of everything, so it doesn't kind of come down to any one specific meta. So, yeah, if you have a TO and they're like, what is objectives? You could point them to the documents, which we'll talk about, as well as this podcast.
So what we're going to do first is we're going to have Chris go through some of the major things that we've added to the main rule set. And then we'll go through each of the objectives and just give you a rundown of how they play. We have Travis here. He wasn't part of the development of it, but we know that he's a high-level X-Wing player. And he's here to ask us the tough questions.
Well, at least some questions.
Yeah, I'm going to try to group these up because we have basically a long sheet of the changes. Hopefully it's not too long, and I don't want to, just read out the wall of text, but I need to. So I'll try to do a quick summary here. So these rules I'm about to give are universal for everything. They're just like part of the rules reference now. So they apply to everything always. So games are now scored using victory points. And victory points are earned the same way you would earn MOV. So every time you destroy a ship, you get points for that ship. Every time your opponent destroys one of your ships, you get points for that ship. With a couple exceptions, the main one being there is no MOV rewarded for half points on large base ships. So if you get, like Han or whatever down to one hull, they still get four full points for him. The other being you can also be awarded VP by completing objectives or, any of the special rules that are part of each objective. So we'll go into what it means later, but let's say you capture an objective for a turn, you get 10 VP. So that means if you kill 90 points of their list and then you have that 10 VP, then the game is over and you win at the end of the round. There's some rules on tiebreakers and, who wins when you both go over 100, et cetera, but that's all given in there. It's not super important for now. But basically, games are scored on VP. You earn VP at the end of turns when things happen based on the objective, and you earn VP for destroying your opponent's ship. When you hit 100, you win the game. Obstacles are done more or less as normal outside of that, so you're required to bring 3 obstacles as part of your list. They must be placed outside of range 1 of any objective as well as any other obstacle, so new rule there. And then another new rule of if an obstacle doesn't have a place it can be put on the board, you're just done placing obstacles. This is actually possible in standard X-Wing as well, but it's slightly more possible. It's never actually happened still, but since it's theoretically possible, you know, we just put it in there as a catch-all. We added a new timing window, which is at the end of the end phase. So specifically what that means is after things like Cornhorn's attack or a ghost's end of round attack happens, but before you've removed any unspent focus or evade tokens. So since there's things like, for instance, there's an objective that can attack, when it attacks, you still have your tokens. So you don't take away all your evade tokens and then it shoots you. That would be super devastating. But it's still pretty devastating because it's shooting at like super pilot skill zero, basically. Speaking of the actual objectives, there's a couple rules that apply to all of them. So for a lot of objectives, they're represented as small or large ship bases. So they don't interact with obstacles in any way, which means if they go over a rock, they don't roll for damage. If they don't take a stress for a debris, for instance. Shots on them, if you're shooting an objective, are still obstructed, though. They do interact that way. An objective that move are moved with templates as usual. So if you take an objective and do a one bank and it overlaps a ship, like a, you know, the template overlaps it, you bump it like you would any other standard ship, and it just goes as far down the template as the ship maneuver would. Objectives can also be obstacles, so rocks or debris clouds. When you place one of those objectives, you should mark it somehow. I use extra munitions tokens just to keep track of them. So put the rock down, put the extra munition token on it, just so that you remember which rock is supposed to be what awards points, basically. Objectives are never friendly ships. Can't protect them with bigs. You can't Palpatine their dice. None of that stuff. They can't be assigned conditions, any kind of special token, no stress, no ion, no criticals. They can't be dealt critical damage. And if they would receive critical damage, it's just standard damage instead. There's a couple ways to interact with objectives. You can control an objective, which means inside a specified range band. So for instance, if something says control at range one, then you have to have a friendly ship inside that range band. And your opponent has to have none of their ships inside that range band. So if you have two ships at range one of that objective and they have one, then it's contested. No one controls it. There's also capturing an objective, which right now can only be done by actions, but there's nothing that limits it to that in the future. So for instance, you go next to an objective, you capture it. So let's say that happens at pilot skill one, it's yours until the end of the game, or your opponent captures it back from you. So if they have a pilot skill five ship, they can go and capture it immediately afterwards. But unless that happens, it's yours until the end of the game. Some really edge case rules: objectives can't flee the battlefield. It's basically a rule on every objective that can move. So if an objective would flee the battlefield, you complete the maneuver that it would do outside of the board, and then you slide it perpendicular back to the board edge. Basically, that just means if you get your shuttle in the corner, you can turn it around and get it out eventually. It just takes a couple of turns. There's no game over states, basically. So you can't, I pointed this corner at the board edge, and now you can't possibly win, no matter how many turns you control it, for instance. And then last but not least, there's a couple of problem cards that basically break everything. So we just had to take them out. Thankfully, they're not cards anyone ever uses. Those are Minefield Mapper, Heroes of the Resistance Han Solo, and Seismic Torpedoes.
Yeah.
Seismic Torpedoes, yeah. Destroying objectives. It's actually caught at the last second because no one ever thought to test it, which I find particularly hilarious.
Those are, like you said, three cards that most people aren't using. And if you are, we're sorry. But the biggest idea for the objectives, there's a lot of different obstacles, and we're trying to focus on flying. And we don't want to mess that up. So
right. It felt really bad when we put an objective in the middle of the board and then your opponent brought three Punishers and just surrounded in bombs and said you could never control it. That's not really what the format's supposed to be for. So it was a small price to pay to get the rest of the format to work.
The other thing I'll mention as well is that as it stands, we're starting with 1.0 on these objectives. There's nothing to say in the future that we can always, if things become very problematic, release a FAQ, release adjustments and tweaks as we move forward. But we've been testing this for quite a bit, and so we hope it doesn't have to come to that and that this can just kind of stand as is.
And I think the best part, because, you know, we are the people who have developed this, we have access to it right away. If something problematic comes up and we take a look at it, we say, hey, this is a problem, we just fix it. It's that simple.
Right. Hopefully that doesn't happen too often. So I want to give the quick rundown of the tournament structure as well. So if you want to use these to run a tournament, if you're familiar with Imperial Assault, we basically lifted their tournament structure because it works really well. So there are six objectives. Most X-Wing tournaments are 6 to 7 rounds. So basically you just take your pool of objectives, you pick an objective for that round, everyone plays it, and then it doesn't get played again until every other objective is played. And if you've got a 7-round tournament, then you do 6 objectives and one just standard dogfight. And then when you get to the cut, if there is a cut, just go ahead and, you know, draw random objectives from ones that haven't been played, or if you've played them all, you know, you can double dip, that's fine.
The alternative is you can also wrinkle it in where whatever your amount, how many rounds you have, you could also have a dogfight in there as well. Like, right. You could, like, let's say you have a four round tournament, you could do 3 objectives and a dogfight. I mean, there's nothing to say that you couldn't do that. That's still an option in the tournament format to have one of those as a standard, which is really an interesting wrinkle, because somebody could create an ultimate objective squad that dumpsters every single objective or something, or most of them, and then suddenly it's trash in the standard format.
Right, like you do still have to be able to survive. Oh shoot, I actually just have to fight my opponent.
And then an additional, you know, we have, this is objectives 1 through 6. When we create and come out with 7 through 12, if you have a longer tournament, you can use those as well. I mean, the point here is to have flexibility and give you guys options.
Correct.
And then one important thing that we haven't mentioned yet is that when you're doing it in a tournament format, each of the rounds are only 60 minutes.
Yes.
This is important. Yes. They're only 60 minutes.
And while tournament format, I'm really glad you reminded me. Because there is no margin of victory at the end of the game, because the score doesn't always add up to 200, these tournaments need to be run with strength of schedule instead, which means that 60-minute time limit's a big deal, because it means you can get that extra Swiss round. So you don't have the problem of, I lost my first game, I'm out of the tournament, because you can get the extra Swiss round in there. So you can do 7 rounds instead of 6. You can do 5 rounds instead of 4, because you save 15 minutes every round.
Dion, I'm going to real quick just say, if you're listening to the podcast and you're not in your car and you're able to be in front of your computer or something, if you can get the objectives in front of you and follow along with this, it'll really help you out as well. Chris, where will these objectives be available?
So we'll have a forum post. We'll put them on Facebook. And we might have to edit in later where to find them, because I'm not sure where the best place is to put them.
Travis? He raised his hand.
I did. I was technically a little bit earlier. So my question is, since you already had a minefield mapper issue, have you contemplated the new rebel bomber thing that throws bombs?
No, nothing for wave 12. And actually, minefield mapper, we didn't even test. It was this is stupid. Let's not even bother.
That. No, that's, yeah. I mean, that one's actually more obvious. Because it's
right, I'm not ahead of, that's a good point though.
I can launch a bomb with 5 forward across the objective to the other side, and that's where they're going to be coming in.
Yep, that might be a problem.
That's the squad I just built while you were talking. I thought one was probably good enough, so I put 2 in, and then there's still to do other stuff.
The thing though, Travis, is that not every single objective that would be useful.
No, that's fine. For anyone listening, I haven't looked at these other than I have objective 1 in front of me. So I don't know the extent to which this matters.
Exactly. So this is an interesting point to bring up, in that for every single one of these, there is a try hard optimal squad that will dumpster the objective. But it's whether or not that squad is any good in all of the other ones that matters as well.
Because you're not trying to win one game, you're trying to win the majority of them. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it's very important that if you're going to go practice objectives, that you pick a list before you pick an objective.
Correct.
All right, let's start with objective number 1. It is titled Shuttle Scuttle. Battle for control of the stranded shuttle. Earn 10 victory points every turn you control the shuttle, and 50 victory points if you can bring it into your deployment zone.
So the setup for objective 1 is 3 obstacles per player. The player with initiative places a large ship base token to represent the shuttle beyond range 4 of any board edge. So you can have a shuttle model, or you could put any large base there. We're just kind of signifying a shuttle model, a large base model. Put that U-wing you never play in there. The shuttle must be placed directly facing a neutral board edge. meaning not you or your opponent, and obstacles are then placed as usual, starting with the player with initiative. Chris, do you want to hit the objective rules?
Yeah. So again, we have this at the end of the end phase timing. So at least for now, every objective where like the objective affects the board state, it always happens at the end of the end phase. So here, at the end of the end phase, if the shuttle is within a player's deployment zone, so range one from, you know, their starting edge, and that player controls the shuttle, the player scores 50 victory points and the shuttle is removed from the board. And that controls is controls at range one. And then also, if the player controls range one of the shuttle, that player scores 10 VP and may execute a white one straight or one bank maneuver from the front guides. So the order there is actually really important. Basically, for every objective, you check to see if it scores, and then if not, it does whatever the objective does. So in this case, the shuttle moves, the player that controls it earns points.
The other important thing to note is, if you're following along, this is our first objective. You may have noticed is one where you can win without ever destroying an enemy ship, which is important. In that, you know, you could have a really bad enemy ship matchup in front of you, but you could still, you now have that alternate win condition established.
Right. So, this of all the objectives, this is the one where the objective is by far the most important, and that's by design. This one's meant to be really punishing to a, like a two ship list, for instance.
Correct. The special rules for objective one, for the shuttle is that the shuttle itself obstructs attacks. It cannot suffer damage, acquire tokens, or be dealt a condition. It's not considered an enemy ship and it cannot flee the battlefield. The only exception is it when it's removed after you score the 50 points.
So yeah, what jumped out at me was since the shuttle, does those one straights or one banks, I was thinking that after about two turns of control, that shuttle would be facing a board edge. And at that point, it would be very hard for your opponent to turn it around. So even if they wrestled control from it, from you, it would take four turns for them to face it towards their own board edge.
Correct.
At that point, the victory point condition already kind of tallied up quite a bit at that point, right? You'd have 40 VP just by turning it around. So my question is, what was your thoughts on that? I'm sure you've noticed that. How did that turn out? Did people, because it seems like you noticed it was, you, as you stated, that it was more punishing. Is that what you mean by more punishing?
Yes. So if you're able to get an early lead on your opponent here, like for instance, if you have that small ship base with the five straight to get to the shuttle before your opponent does, and you can get it angled even a little bit in your direction, it is massively painful for your opponent. Like this objective alone is basically here to say, hey, like if you want to play something like Dash Nim, you have to be willing to have your Dash Nim get shot turn one, or you're going to be, you know, starting 30 or 40 points behind on this particular objective.
And I want listeners to remember as well that controlling the shuttle means that you are within range one and there are no other enemy ships at range one of the shuttle. So that really forces, like there could be games where the shuttle never moves, right? But at the very least, you're forcing quick engagements in this objective.
Right. And so that's actually very normal that the shuttle never moves. Like there's usually three or four turns of engagement on the shuttle long before it ever moves. It's just too dangerous to let your opponent control it that it rarely happens unless the game is ending.
And that'll be a running theme for a lot of these objectives. You'll like some of you may listen or read these and be like, well, this, I'm not ever scoring objective points. And that may happen in a lot of games where you don't score objective points, but you, by the very nature of the format, have to play around the objective just so that your opponent doesn't.
Well, I would like to jump in a little bit because I have sort of gotten into Imperial Assault a little bit. I went and did Nationals. But the point being is that I was actually asking and like the backgrounds of Imperial Assault. And as you kind of noted, I think the idea of the objectives is, and you mentioned this earlier, but to kind of elaborate in case there isn't someone that is familiar with Imperial Assault, is simply that the objectives means that if your opponent turtles, you can just do the objectives and win. But since both of you see the objectives, your opponent sees you going for the objectives, that it almost inevitably does lead to you guys murdering each other, which, by the way, is fun. That's at least my opinion of that part of Imperial Assault. But that's why it leads you to murdering each other, because if you don't actively try and stop them, your opponent will just collect the objective. So that's why it looks like, at least in the Imperial Assault side, you guys can elaborate here as you go through the different objectives. That's why it kind of ends up everyone murders each other, but it's because of that aspect, not because there's some failure in the objective. The reason people aren't completing objectives is the other opponent sees them trying and tries to actively inhibit that.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, Travis. Like, we had, Paul was one of the testers on this, and he's obviously big into Imperial Assault. And I had talked to a lot of my friends who play Imperial Assault, and they all actually really like the mission format, you know. And you, what you just described is exactly kind of our kind of basis for a lot of these, in that they're controlling your engagement, you know, they're forcing engagement. Like, let's say, for example, in Shuttle Scuttle, you have Soontir, and Soontir takes, you know, two damages at one hull. If you're flying Soontir, you must now decide, do I break away and let him take control of this objective, or do I have to stand and fight so that he doesn't?
Yeah, risk getting blocked.
Exactly. And those are just important decisions that have to be made, more so than a normal game of X-Wing where with like Miranda, you could just leg it and get out of there.
Fantastic. So that is the Shuttle Scuttle. Let's move on to objective 2. Turn the page when you hear a sound like this.
Tring!
Beautiful.
All right. Objective 2 is called Rock Riot. Battle for control of the marked obstacles. Earn 10 victory points for each objective you control at range 1-3. One additional thing you'll see that we've added on our objective sheets is that we include a map for the setup for every single objective. So if you have a question with the setup words, there's also a picture. Go for it, Ryan.
Yeah. This, I think, out of all the objectives, this one's my favorite. So obstacles per player 3, setup, the player with initiative places the first obstacle as an objective beyond range 3 of any board edge. So the first one you place is, you know, the objective, you place it, like put an extra munitions or an ion or something to mark it. The opposing player then places the second obstacle as an objective beyond range 3 of any board edge. After both objectives are placed, the 4 remaining obstacles are placed as usual. Something I'll say about the placement of this is, in all the testing, I've seen some crazy things happen. We've seen opposite corners, we've seen them like really far apart from each other, and we've seen them literally directly right next to each other, like as close as they can be.
Yeah, so this is actually the most simple objective, which I think is probably why it's a favorite. It's basically at the end of the end phase, you check range 3 of both rocks, and if one player controls a rock at range 1-3, they earn 10 VP. So you could, since there's two rocks, that means each player could be earning 10 VP, or one player could be earning 20, or neither player could be earning any. But each rock's checked individually, basically. And then there are no special rules. That's really all there is to it.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. I really like this one because it's, again, forcing engagement, but at the same time, you can have alternative win conditions. Like, you could kill a couple ships and realize, okay, now I'm just going to, now that I have a numbers advantage, I'm going to send one just to control a rock and my other one's a dogfight. This is one of those objectives where, again, two ships have a really tough time. Like, you could have one, you could have a swarm of like 4 or 5 do really well in this.
And this is one of the objectives, at least in the Gold Squadron testing, that we never had anybody score this objective. It just forced a really quick engagement, and they were all really fun games. This was definitely one of the favorites for most of the people who tried them, because you got to play X-Wing really quickly.
I've actually got a couple of really interesting examples like this. Again, we had some of the best testing results on this. So one of the secrets to this object, the whole scenario format, is that 4XZ is one of the best lists in the game. So I was playing against 4XZ with like a patrol leader with Vader and Omega leader and the Inquisitor. And it was really interesting because eventually it came down to the Inquisitor versus a couple X-Wings. But suddenly it was terrifying to be the Inquisitor there, where usually you would win by default, solely because not only does he have to stay at range 1-3 of two things, but he also has to survive getting shot. So eventually the X-Wings pulled through just because they were able to limit the number of places that the Inquisitor could be, which I thought was very interesting. And then the other one being basically this objective, like you said, it really, usually it doesn't matter, which is good. It just makes you fight and then you don't have to worry about it. There's no headache. You have to check range when it's close every now and then, but that's it. But Corrin Horan hates this objective and Asajj hates this objective.
They both really, really do.
So those were both big wins, not because I hate those ships, but they're both point fortressy things we're trying to discourage. Like Asajj has been great in all of these testing, but it's no longer you get Asajj alone in the end game and you win the game.
Kylo Ren's not going to like this one either.
No, he's not. I'm super out.
Travis, what?
So being a layman at these, this looks like a King of the Hill. Is that a good representation of it? Because you have two control points and then someone needs to be in it at all times or you start losing.
Right.
Okay. I mean, that's not bad. I just meant that's what it jumped out in terms of the style.
Right. It's King of the Hill and the hill is a radius 3 circle, which is almost the majority of the board. Like to just, it's hard to put in scale, but if you have a rock in the middle of the board, the only, like in the direct center, the only things that aren't in range of it at range 3 are like the very sides and back of the board.
I find some of the most interesting games in this objective is when like you're as the first player place the rock as close as you can to your side of the board. And then your opponent sometimes like they either put it close to you, but if they do, you have an opportunity to get points faster than them or they put it near them. And when you put them as far as away as they can be from each other, the initial engagement's really funny because sometimes I had a game where two rounds went by where we each just cashed in a couple free points because we each stayed on the outskirts of our own objective. So it was 20-20 before the first engagement, which made things a lot more interesting.
Right. It really screws up your tournament math, which is...
My immediate thought to that, though, Ryan, is if you did that, I might respond and do that and then just make sure one of my guys is in range 3 of yours. Then you scored nothing, right. But I scored 10.
Well, that was the, you know, it was one of those things where it was kind of a game of chicken.
Oh, no, I get it. I just meant like that's interesting to me because the person I would put there is probably an A-wing with evade.
Right. Well, though, when we tested it, we both had squads that were suboptimal for this particular objective.
Oh,
I think we each.
OK,
so we each had two ships, I think, or something like that. It was both like we both had squads that were not ideal for this particular one. And so we were both playing chicken like, all right, is he going to block my objective? No, I'm not blocking his. OK. And then finally, we eventually curled into the center of the board and engaged. But it was interesting.
I mean, I still find it interesting that that happened. But I like the idea of doing that kind of math. If you put yours back and then they might respond with a similar idea. That doesn't mean that you can't actually score objectives from them if they are not good at their range management, which is very interesting. And I guarantee if you do that once, they'll come in.
And a solid block can make sure that they stay out of range of your rock and you be able to score.
That part wasn't obvious to me. That's actually super cool. As just someone that likes blocking, I didn't think about using blockers to keep them out of the range for a turn just to score more objectives. That really piques my interest. That sounds
Travis, here's one to get to your attention. I took a patrol leader in half my games with Vader on it and just blocked range one of the objective, like at the shuttle, and said, you can't be here. Also, here's Vader crew at the end of the turn. So if you happen to get in range of it anyways, I'm going to kill you before it counts.
But that particular squad isn't like super broken because it gets dumpstered by a lot of other squads for that are good in objectives as well.
I was very sad about the 4 X-Wings.
So objective number 3 is Shielded Sensor. Battle for control of the marked obstacle. Earn 10 victory points for controlling range 2 of the marked obstacle. In addition, the objective protects nearby ships from attacks beyond range 2.
So our setup for this one, guys, is obstacles per player 3 again. Setup, the player with initiative must place the first obstacle as an objective beyond range 4 of any board edge. So if you know, placing that first one, it is that's the one we're talking about. That's the shielded obstacle. The 5 remaining obstacles are placed as usual, starting with the player with initiative. So something you might notice is that the player with initiative is placing the first obstacle and then the first one after that as well.
Yeah, that's right. And the objective rules here on this one are very simple. Just like the other one, at the end of the end phase, if a player controls range 2, well, range 1 to 2 of an objective, that player scores 10 victory points.
I will say that I love the thematic sense of this, because what you picture in your mind is there's a shield out in space, like a shield bubble. And if you're inside, you're protected. But if somebody's inside the shield with you, they're hitting you like normal.
Yeah, so that's actually the special rules, is basically, like Dion said, the middle is a shield. It's a big bubble. When a ship inside that bubble, range 1 to 2 bubble, is defending from an attack, if the attacker is outside range 1 to 2 of that bubble, you just add an evade result. So everything inside the bubble has reinforce against everything outside the bubble.
Right. So again, you're seeing a theme here. It's forcing engagement. People want to be moving into that bubble for, you know, skirmish purposes, because one, that's how you're going to control the objective. And two, if you're outside the bubble, you're not getting very powerful shots.
There's not much for me to add. That's really simple, except I like the idea that if someone messes up and is trying to get back in the bubble and lands range 1 of someone inside the bubble, even though those two are close, it doesn't matter because one guy's still inside the bubble getting the extra evade. So I like that idea of punishment, of you left and can't. And there's a reason you might leave, right? You might swing out and come back in because you're hurt and trying to get another regroup. So that seems mm-hmm. really interesting.
Yeah, so a peek behind the curtain on this one. This is really built to make it so that massed TLT spam isn't as good as it wants to be, because TLTs tend to be very good at controlling area and just like are generally very efficient. We found in a lot of objectives, like maybe it's not that it's too good, it's that it's too good at too many of them. So here, if you roll up with your TLTs, you want to be inside the bubble, you're probably at range 1 of a lot of things.
Exactly. And if you're outside of the bubble, your TLT shots are getting neutered.
Yeah, if you've ever shot a Wookiee with TLT, imagine that Wookiee has 3 or 4 agility now.
It's very sad.
Objective number 4 is VIP assist. Control a disabled transport to earn victory points. Earn 10 victory points and fire on enemies every turn you control the transport.
So again, obstacles per player 3. The player with initiative places a large ship base to represent the transport outside of range 4 of any board edge. And that's not a lot of room for anybody that knows the size of an X-Wing. It's a pretty small square. You have to move around that. And again, like we always use U-Wings for our model on all these. You can use a shuttle or whatever, but any large base. 6 obstacles are placed as usual, starting with the player with initiative.
Yeah, and to just kind of elaborate on that, you can see in the picture, but for anyone that's not aware, an X-Wing mat is range 9 by range 9 across. So outside range 4 of any board edge is the direct center in a range 1 square. And a large ship base means you get half a ship base, like wiggle room on the sides. And the easiest way to measure that is usually take a range 3 ruler and a range 1 ruler and just put them end to end. Or, you know, you want to measure more than one side at once, you can take a 5 straight and a range 2 ruler, and that'll do the same thing. Or 2 5 straights, etc.
Objective rules.
Yeah, so again, at the end of the end phase, if a player controls range 1 of the transport, that player scores 10 victory points. Also, the player controlling the transport can attack with the transport. And the transport has 3 attack. It can attack outside its firing arc, so it's a turret. When attacking, it can convert all focus to hit results, so basically has expertise. Just like the shuttle, it obstructs attacks. It's treated as an enemy player as an enemy ship for both players. So for instance, you can target lock it, which is relevant for things like Omega Leader and like Tarn, but may not be attacked.
And M9G8?
Yes, an M9G8.
Right. I did just think of a question, and I'm surprised I didn't think of it earlier. What happens if you run into the shuttles in either 1 or 4?
So it's just like overlapping a ship. It basically, it's a ship base on the board, so you lose your actions, you overlap it, just like
but
any
no
other ship.
Penalties.
Right.
Okay.
We had in our league a couple rough experimentations of like objectives having negative effects like ion projector and things like that. That was just in our league. But we found that it didn't work. It kind of ruined the whole point of what we were trying to do. So we just scrapped those.
I did also try, because it made me nervous that there was no downside, because generally you don't want to add rules unless it's absolutely necessary, like keep it as simple as possible. But, you know, like maybe advanced sensors on things run into the objective every turn got to be a problem, but we couldn't break it. That doesn't mean it's unbreakable. Like, you know, if we have to, we can go back and add it, but hopefully it's just fine and we don't need to worry about it. So again, the at the end of the end phase timing is super important here, because especially because this attacks. So if you have just one ship contesting the objective, and like let's say it's a TIE fighter with two hull left, if he dies in the combat phase and your opponent controls it, all of a sudden you don't. So now your opponent also gets to shoot again. So it's very important that you're confident that the ship that you're using to control area doesn't die, like as part of your game plan. And again, because this attacks at the end of the end phase, it can hit really hard. Granted, it can't attack at range one, or the other player would control it, so it's only ever three dice at range 2 to 3. But still, when everyone spent all their tokens, it hits like a truck.
I also like what you're saying there, in that this is one of those objectives where, like, I also played this one with a two ship squad, and I was running a kind of interference with one of my ships to kind of keep my other one at range one and make it hard for them to get to the shuttle. And it was like what Travis was talking about and Dion was talking about. I was using one as a blocker, and I was able to kind of get more firepower by having that shuttle shoot. So that was really interesting to me.
And while you control it, you have a third ship on the board.
Yeah. Exactly.
Or if you have a two ship squad plus one ship, which more ships are good.
More shots are good. We all know that.
Yeah. And this is definitely one where in testing, people who ignored the objective were punished very hard.
Very, very badly. Yeah.
You do not want to leave that shuttle alone. One thing when placing, the person with initiative, they do get to choose the placement of the arc. Now, this ship doesn't move, but it can matter when it comes to shooting ships that have auto thrusters.
Yeah, correct. It super matters.
So keep that in mind when you're placing it.
Very, very good point. I didn't think of that. I tested this and I didn't think of that. Wow. Good point. Travis, did you have any thoughts on this one in particular?
Nope. Seems pretty cool to me, actually. Like a lot of these so far, I'm looking for ways to break it as we're talking about it.
I'm glad that nothing is like blatantly sticking out.
Normally don't get excited about bombs, but the thought of just trajectory, whatever, at five launching those bombs as you're trying to approach the objective does still interest me.
Yep. Bomb plating them off, whatever.
All right. And here's the beauty of us making this format is that if we've discovered that it's a problem, we just say it's banned.
Yeah, we don't have to wait for LFL approval. Like,
hopefully there's something more elegant we can do than it's banned, but in the case of bomb launching, it might just be, all right, I'm out.
That list sounds particularly bad for King of the Hill.
Yes, that would be very bad for the shielded sensor. That's cute. You can have your 10 points. Yep. Everything inside the shield is dead.
So it sounds bad for objective 2 and 3 and better for 1 and 4 so far. So like, if you're already doing that much, then it needs to be a labor of love than necessarily a good tournament strategy. Still neat.
Objective 5, crate carriers. Escort friendly crates across the board while destroying your opponents. Each crate successfully transferred across the board scores 50 victory points. And I do have to say that this is personally my favorite of all the objectives.
Was this the one that I had submitted? I can't remember.
This is Ryan. This one's your baby.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, yes. I always get this one in Freight Fight mixed up. So obstacles per player 3, setup. After all obstacles are placed, each player, starting with the player with initiative, places a small ship base as a friendly crate token within range 1 of their board edge, and beyond range 3 of either player's board edge. The other thing is, in the documents I'm going to be creating, it might be on a bit of a delay, but I will have like small base, like printouts that you can print out on label paper and put on a junk base that you never use, like a Nave Squadron pilot or something, that you could sub in for these if you want, just if you really care that much about objectives. That'll be an available component at some point once I finish the graphic design on them.
And in the setup there, it's important to note that when you deploy the crate token, that's C-R-A-T-E, not K-R-A-Y-T, it goes on from your point of view. So when you're looking at the map there, the left side of the board is where your crate starts. So from your opponent's point of view, that's also the left side of the board. So it's nice and mirrored. and you're trying to get your crate from the left to the right. So just to make, because in the rules, we have to say things like your left side of the board, et cetera. But if you're visualizing it, things are moving from your left to your right. If they're friendly, if they're hostile, they're moving from your right to your left.
And this is one of the more quote unquote complex objectives, but we've tested it a lot. And I agree with Dion. This is my second favorite one, and it's a ton of fun. Do you want to talk about the rules here, Chris?
Yeah. So again, at the end of the end phase, if a friendly crate token is inside the opponent's objective zone, which is the range 3 band in the middle of your right side of the board. So all the way at range 1 of the right side of the board, range 3 away from the edge on either side is like basically the goal. So you're trying to get your crate into that goal. So if you go straight across the board from where you start, you'll end up in there. So basically, the very first thing that happens at the end of the end phase is if your crate is inside that zone, you score 50 victory points, the crate gets removed from the board. The next thing that happens is any crates that are still on the board perform a one to two speed straight or bank maneuver. So one straight, two straight, one bank, two bank from either set of the guides. So you can move backwards if you desperately need to for some reason.
And there's a very specific reason it's a one or a two, isn't it, Chris? we had a lot of games where my opponent or our opponents just decided, oh, if I get my crate in a perfect spot, I'm just perma-blocking them.
What if your crate could never move and you have to back it up and turn it around? So yeah, basically the order of operations is check to see if it scored. Move it, and that's in initiative order. So if I have initiative, my crate moves first. If my opponent has initiative, the crate moves second. And then, so once you've either scored or moved, if you don't have a crate token on the board, you deploy it just like you did at the start of the round. So outside of range 3 of your board edge, outside of range 3 of your opponent's board edge, range 1 on the left side of the board.
And that's important to note because you could score 50 points, and then it's not on the board anymore, and then you respawn it to have a chance to get 50 again in a number of rounds.
Okay, so we got the rules for how they move. Basically, you check to see if it scored, you move it, you spawn a new one if you don't have one. But how do you keep your opponent from doing it? So the rules for crate tokens themselves are they are ship tokens. You can attack them, they have health, they don't have shields. So they're 0 agility, 6 hull, 0 shields. They may not perform attacks, but they may be attacked. They are equipped with sensor jammer, and then the rules for sensor jammer are listed below it if you don't know it off the top of your head. And they cannot flee the battlefield. And sensor jammer is when defending, you can change a hit result on your opponent's die to a focus result. They can't reroll that result.
And I think it's important to re-establish the rule that we said earlier that these are not considered friendly ships, so you can't have like a Biggs or Lorik escort on them as well.
Right. You can't draw their fire, no selflessness. Correct. Get all that out of here.
Yeah. So
it has to be fair.
Travis, I'm interested to hear your opinion on this straight up, like strategically, like you're looking at this objective. This might be one of the few objectives where the objective is actually the primary goal. You know what I mean?
So this might be a dumb question, but it wasn't. When I think of escort, I would have thought like all the others that I need a ship near the crate to move it, but that's not what it says, right? Like the crates just kind of move by themselves.
Right. So it's your crate and it's always yours. And the only way to get rid of it is to kill it or score it.
So it moves by itself, period.
Yes. So actually, your follow-up question, I'll go ahead and answer. Absolutely, yes. People ignore the objective and fight each other over one of the two crates or just over them not at all. That is a thing that happens.
Well, that seems pretty obvious. This seems like a right. game of football, like simultaneous football.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
As in you're both running to each other's end zone and then you look and say, I'm losing that race. I need to stop them.
Right. So extra background info. It takes 6 to 7 turns to get that crate across the board. So if you kill it right when it's about to score, your opponent probably doesn't have time to get another one down there, which also leads to an odd game of chicken. Like, no, you can keep it alive for now. I'll take care of it later. But then when it starts getting close, the clock is on because you generally don't want your opponent scoring 50 victory points.
Usually. And with sensor jammer, it's deceptively difficult to kill. Like there were a couple times where I let my opponent get a little too close, hoping that they wouldn't be able to get it again. And then I shot it with 3 ships and it survived with 1 and because I didn't have focus tokens because I used them on defense or other things. And then suddenly, oh no, it survived with 1 and they got 50 points.
Yeah, sensor jammer is sneaky good.
I mean, anybody who remembers back, you know, to the 2015 Palpaces meta, that sensor jammer does work. Like, we actually initially just had it 2 agility, 6 hull, but it felt bad to have a crate token be dodging your shots.
Yeah.
Like, it felt terrible. You're like, all right, my TIE fighter is going to shoot. Sweet. I missed a stationary box. Nailed it.
I mean, that's pretty fluffy, but again, Travis, did you have any other thoughts on this?
No. I really am just digesting it. I mean, it seems like people will probably go for the objectives first, and then by consequence that the crates are kind of moving through the center of the board, it's going to be tough to get your opponent to not shoot it. On the other hand, the very threat of it is enough to bring your opponent's attention. So I think there's going to be more involved strategies than I'm immediately thinking of. Like, if you're just trying to ram the thing down the middle, that's probably the most naive way of doing it. And there's probably some sort of like actual crate strategy that you can employ.
I can give you some of that to start out, some, you know, useful starting tips. So the 2-bank is faster than the 2-straight. So
yeah,
if you 2-bank and return,
2 banks to go fast.
Right. Also, these things are the world's best blockers. They are absolutely ridiculous blockers.
They're great.
And because you can 2-bank backwards, like, oftentimes it's worth it to just like, all right, I'm going to get this thing to the end. I don't care. If I block Suti here, I win the game. I don't care about the objective, right? Like, I just need this to block this turn. But because it moves at the end of the end phase, your opponent, like, they see you do that before they set their dial. So you can, like, super, super get in people's head with blocking with this thing. Because, again, if the game is, let's say, 9 or 10 rounds, you have 60 minutes, and it takes 7 to score it, you have a turn or two of wiggle room. And granted, going backwards costs you 2 turns, but you can still get it across the board pretty safely before time is called.
Well, there's something that strikes me in the sense that there is an advantage of kind of mixing and matching the objectives at any given time and killing your opponent. Because I think you mentioned it before, Ryan, where if you kill a ship, now you're up a ship. It is easier for you to board control, not just like end up killing their ships, because that may not be actually be true, but it is easier certainly for you to zone out an opponent if you're +1 a ship.
That's a danger. Yep, you're about to say what I'm about to say, Ryan. That's why it's important to have more than 2 ships, because you're going to feel bad if you only have 2 and you lose one.
Yeah, and I didn't test a full TIE Swarm, but I tested 5 strikers, the lowest 1 strikers in this format, and it was A tier or A minus tier. They pop like balloons, but I had a situation where I was playing against Miranda. I had 5 strikers versus Miranda Corrin in this very objective, and I won the game without ever killing Miranda or Corrin.
That's awesome.
Because I got the crate across the board twice because I kept blocking them from stopping my crates from moving. And they just couldn't kill the crate in time. I was just making, because if they were trying to kill it, they were spending their tokens and I got Corrin's shields down, and it was just really, really fun. And my opponent like thought it would just be an auto win, and they just... It was satisfying that at the end of the game, I had 2 TIE Strikers and full, like, my opponent had full everything and I still won. It was great.
So I do have good news for you, because I play tested a whole lot of TIE Swarms of different variants. So Dallas will be very happy that his TIE Swarms are terrifying now. When you can tell an opponent, hey, you have to joust me or I'm going to score 20 points before you can do anything. They're so good. They're still counterplay, but they're super good. Like, go report back to him. I jousted Ray off the board and then won with two TIE fighters versus Miranda at time. Be very, very happy for the roundabout of scoring when my 2 TIE fighters were worth more than Miranda.
Objective number 6 is freight fight. Battle to control the abandoned freight. Ships may capture freight tokens. When a freight token reaches the capturing player's deployment zone, the player gains 25 victory points.
Set up 3 obstacles again. I know it's weird that we have to specify 3 each time, but there were times where in the original testing of this there were fewer or there were more, and there are several more objectives that we have that aren't finished that tweak that amount as well. The setup: after all obstacles are placed, each player, starting with the player with initiative, alternates placing a small ship base as a freight token beyond range 4 of any deployment zone and beyond range 1 of any other board edge until there are 4 total freight tokens. So again, you may have to look at our map on the sheets for this for it to make a little more sense.
Yeah, but that's actually significantly simpler than it sounds. When you get a chance to look at it, it's just a range one wide strip down the center of the board.
Yeah, super
this,
simple.
This reminds me of dodgeball.
Yeah.
Like playing dodgeball as a kid, you line them up, you line them up right in the center.
Yep.
Go get them.
Go.
I never even thought of that, but that's exactly what it is.
It's really, that's what I was, Dion, you and I are like a tawny mind licked right now, because every time I played this one, that's exactly what I thought of. Like,
beautiful.
I even started a game once by saying to my opponent, dodgeball. So it's really funny that you say that.
All right. So the rules for this. So once again, end of the end phase. If a freight token is inside a capturing player's deployment zone, that player gains 25 victory points and the tokens removed from the board. And then once you remove everything that scored, players activate all captured freight tokens in any order you choose. So if you control three, do them in whichever order you want. Starting with the player with initiative, of course. The freight tokens must, not may, perform either a one straight or one bank maneuver from either set of guides. So again, these can move backwards. And remember, they're starting in a range one strip in the middle of the board. So basically there's a net, a figurative net in the middle of the board where they all start. And you run up and grab them. It's the short story. Because we have this new action. So all ships within range one of an objective add capture to their action bar. And it's just action. Capture a freight token at range one. That freight token is captured by you. And if you remember, we defined captured long ago at the very beginning of all of this, and it's up in the master rule set. So you can go take a look. But basically, captured means you control it until either someone captures it from you or it's removed from the board through some other rule.
Again, on this, I'm working on, obviously, like, I can't make cardboard tokens or anything, but there will be cutouts you can have, like, for stock paper or whatever. I'm making both red and green a capture icon so that you can be able to use that. If you can use any token you want, right? It doesn't matter. But if you want, you can have a red or a green one to specify who's got it.
And Ryan, you could even this is just an idea for the bases that you were planning on making. You don't even have to even put it on a piece of cardboard. You could just lay it on the plastic. That way the base is still usable.
Right, exactly.
Without you could use red or green bases.
Yeah, that's what we did. It's just swap it out with a red or green base every time, red or blue every time it changes control. Or use like that's an ion, like I'll be an ion token, you be a stress token. All that worked fine too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what we did.
And in the note taking front, generally the easiest way to keep track of the score is to just have like a little pile. So I used energy tokens because nobody uses energy tokens for anything ever. And we just had two piles for points scored. Again, lifted directly from Imperial Assault. That's what they taught me to do, and it worked really well. You could also, write it down, but really whatever you find more convenient.
We were using the numbered core set tokens, the ones that have a 1 or a 2 on them for damage. That's what we use. So a 1 is 10 points and a 2 is 20.
Right. And I hate to jump around, but that's a very good, important point. When the other objectives suffer damage, it's important that you don't use damage cards to track it. It needs to be done outside of that so that you don't break the game state for things like I'll show you the dark side, etc.
So this stands out again because you were reading them in a certain order, and you know my mind naturally wants to draw like correlations that aren't there. Unlike the last one where you control a crate and it's attackable, once you control these things, they're yours and they just move.
Yep, they're yours until someone captures them.
Right, so someone can't just attack your freight once you capture it. They actually have to come physically take it from you.
Yes, exactly. So this is one of those situations where, unlike controlling, where you can't, if two ships are within range one of something, that's a neutral control. Whoever had it still has it. This is capturing. So if a PS1 comes in and captures something, pilot skill matters in this, because a PS9 can go like, nope, just kidding, it's mine. But you have to spend an action to do that.
It also comes down with initiative as well.
Right. It's a little more gamesmanship.
And the reason they're different is, again, to just kind of diversify. So the other objective where you can attack these small ship bases cost attacks, whereas this costs actions. And it's unlikely that some list that's like better than it should be at one of them will be better at both. It's unlikely that you have actions to spare as well as attacks to spare. So it's just to, try to smooth things out and make sure that, like, oh, I rolled up with 8 TIE fighters. Okay, I have 8 free actions. I'll go ahead and just grab them all turn one. Whereas those two dice are going to struggle bringing down and even keeping up with that create token that can move through rocks and everything.
This is another one where a Tie Swarm can have a little bit of issues, because despite it having superior numbers, a lot of times in a Tie Swarm, your pilot skill is lower. So you have your Ties come up and snipe these things, but you could have a really nifty arc dodger like Kylo, PTL Kylo, get around your Tie Swarm arcs and then slip in and use one of his actions to take one away.
Yeah. And actually, speaking of Kylo, the only Wave 12 testing I've gotten on our set of objectives is actually this with PTL Advanced Sensors Kylo. And I do want to note that it is add capture to your action bar, which is done on purpose. You can push the limit capture.
Correct.
And then something additional here is, remember that the freight tokens don't care about obstacles. So once you have captured it and it's time to move it, look at what lanes you have available. I mean, you can fly it through a rock, and that can cause your opponent to have to make some tough choices if they're going to want to try to capture it the next turn. So that was one of the things I really liked about this one, is that you had, because you do have to be in position to capture it, once you're moving it, you have to think, all right, what's a bad spot I can put it in for my opponent?
I'd also like to note that really be aware that you're trying to get them to your deployment zone, not your opponent's deployment zone, because I made that mistake the first time I played the game until I reread it and I realized, oh no, it's one turn away from being in my opponent's deployment zone. And I actually had to win the game by K-turning in front of it and blocking it because it must move. So I was still controlling it, but I was blocking it from moving forward.
Yeah, that was back when they couldn't move backwards.
Yeah, it was in a previous version where they couldn't move backwards. And I was like, oh no, I've made a terrible mistake.
I played myself.
I did.
Turns out they were moving backwards the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Travis, what do you think about this now that we've kind of gone through it, this one?
It seems super interesting. Again, there's probably a strategy, but I like the sort of, and again, I kind of foresee some of these will just devolve into someone just like having to attack each other, which is a good thing, right? Like, I suspect that the objectives will be overshadowed. And the reason I'm thinking of that is simply because, like I said, when I noticed, hey, once I own this thing, I just own it and it just moves and you can't stop it unless you come own it from me.
Right.
And so we both see that. And then as you pointed out about timing, there's sort of a stare off like a dodgeball. So one, let's say we're low PS, runs up and is like, sweet, I captured it. And the other guy goes, you have a choice. You can go, no, I captured it. But either way, you're staring at each other without mods. Or the higher PS guy goes, sweet, it's totally yours, but I'm going to just light you up and then steal it.
It's without a doubt, Travis, like some of these objectives, like I love them because when they come down to it, do they just devolve into fighting? Yeah, but it's not the kind of dumb fighting we have in the standard format where you can just run away or fortress or castle or not engage for a ton of turns. There's a very specific reason that the time windows for these are 60-minute rounds. I don't think I had a single game go to time in, oh man, I've put 25 games.
So what I'm seeing here is, so of course, what I'm saying is, so the objectives are leading to some sort of fight, because if you let your opponent just do the objectives without you, you can just lose. So what I'm also seeing here, though, is that zones of control are important, as in, like, if you can zone out your opponent for whatever reason. And I've said this before. So that could be like, I just point a lot of my arcs behind this crate, meaning you want to land there to capture it. But that means I'm going to shoot you with 3 shots. So all of a sudden you're like, oh, I don't actually want to be there, but that gives the crate one more turn to turn, like keep going. And then if I can put 2 arcs in there where it's just a danger zone to walk in, right? I'm putting my opponent in a different set where we're, air quotes fighting, but I'm actually doing the objective, right? Like I'm threatening the entire time, I'm forcing you to come in and take it, but I'm punishing you for doing it. And that's not quite the same as a normal dogfight. Like I'm actually going for the objectives, but it will definitely look like we're just shooting each other, but I'm actually, one step higher and trying to punish you in terms of where my arcs are. So you don't want to come take, or I punish you for coming to take it.
That reminds me, Travis, of another important element of this. I know we've said that arcs and maneuvers are a really important part of the game, but range control is something I really believe is important in X-Wing that's kind of been lost more and more recently in the game with turrets and everything not really caring what range things are at. In this, range control and, like you said, pointing your arcs and controlling sections of the board are very important. Because there's no pre-measuring, knowing where your ship moves and how far and everything is that much more important in the objective format. That, and I think that harkens back to a much kind of older form of X-Wing that was more enjoyable, I'd say, like more pure. I don't want to use the wrong word, but I had much more fun playing objectives, in my opinion.
So on that note, if you're coming to Crate Cup and you're going to be the objective player, make sure you know how fast you need to move outside of the gate to get to range one of, you know, range outside of range four of any board edge. Like how fast do I have to take a small base ship to get to that middle range control for the shuttle or the VIP? Or how fast do I have to go to get to the shuttle when it starts closer to my opponent's side by that half ship base than it does mine? Because those little differences matter a lot.
It's very sad when you do a 3-4 or something round one and you realize you're just outside of range three of that asteroid control and your opponent got 20 points because you're a dummy.
Yes.
Because that's happened to me. I was like, a 3-4 should be fine, and I was just outside range three of both obstacles and my opponent did like a 4-4 boost and I went, oh, I guess you just got 20 free points.
And I did want to do a quick little meta discussion of, you know, well, I guess meta strategy for objective six, because I think strategically it's by far the most complicated. It's not the most complicated rule set, I think the crates are, but this leads to some really interesting game decisions. And that's basically because the area that you can set these freight tokens down is very long. It's range 7 across by range 1, and you're each setting 2. So if you want to, you can take 2 and just put them all the way at the edge, put your entire list there, and go grab them turn 1. And no opponent is going to come and stop you from doing that because they would have to be suicidal, right? They'll joust your whole list. That's kind of insane. Because you're each setting 2. Oftentimes, basically, you'll see each player set 2 on exactly opposite corners and each go and grab 2, and then they'll make it back uncontested, and suddenly it's a race to 50 MOV. Which is...
That's an exciting game.
Right. That race to 50 MOV super messes with tournament math, which is actually why it's 25 each. One of my like concerns launching this is that somebody will find a list that has like 2 24-point ships and a 49-point ship that's way too good, and then all of a sudden we need to change this 25 VP to 30 VP, but that messes with the balance of it or something like that. But, you know, take note that, like, so if you're playing against like a 100-point Miranda list, you can take both of those crates and kill Miranda's friends, and you never have to worry about Miranda ever. And you can set it up in such a way that Miranda doesn't have time to stop you from getting those crates without leaving her little friend bubble.
There are some other objectives where Miranda Corrin is not a good squad, but that doesn't mean you can't fly Miranda Corrin in the objective format. Like, Miranda Corrin's pretty solid in this objective.
They're still very good. You just lose the win condition of my ship is worth more. My ship won't die, and it's worth more than what you have left on the board.
Well, what I was going to say is, based on what Chris just kind of described, so that's smart, and I understand it. And especially if you're reacting to your opponent. So if they do that, it's probably in your best interest to mimic it and put the crates on your side. And you're not going to stand across it. But what if you had really fast ships that could go intercept? Like, they would need to guard their crates because they still don't just go to their deployment. Meaning, like, let's say you have an A-wing or a new flight assist, because those guys actually go like almost as fast. And so, like, what if one of those guys peeled off and like tried to swoop around and just slow down their crates? Now you get 2 crates and maybe they don't get all 50, or they have to turn around. Like, that's not just because you do it. I like the idea of just racing to 50, right? Considering the game ends when you hit 100, but there's also, you don't have to give up on that just because that's a strategy. That struck out at me. I was going to be way more wholesome and put them evenly across the board.
I had an opponent playing a bump master on this, and they just flew their bump master onto my side of the board and was using it to block my crates from moving.
I am so glad that we got... So another peek behind the curtain, testing results. So triple jump masters and Wookiees were absolutely destroying objectives, and we're like, what? Or at least I was like, oh god, you know, like,
yeah,
the triple jumps, we saw that right away,
like,
for sure.
What do we even do? It's like, okay, we made these objectives, the whole point is to make people engage and fight and care about arcs, except jump masters are just way better at that than everything else. Okay, thank you FFG, thank you, you saved us from jump masters. the remaining concern is Wookiees, and Freight Fight is kind of the check on Wookiees. Because we were talking about that engagement math. If you take a four straight out of the gate with your Wookiee, you're out of range to capture that objective. Yeah. If you take that five straight to Chopper, take it, you don't have a reinforced token. And a Wookiee without a reinforced token is a very, very sad Wookiee.
Yeah, this is not, if you're in flight trip Wookiees, this is not a very good objective for it.
Well, wait a minute. You said if he takes a five, five straight Chopper and then take it with the action.
Capture. Okay. Yeah,
because you can't just do it. You also have to have Chopper.
Right. So you, you only have one that does it. You take a damage and you get super trashed by your opponent that's also at range one.
And here's one of the things that happened in our testing was somebody put it all the way on their edge, and they were, you know, the other opponent was looking at their squad. It's like, you know what? I think I can take this guy in a joust. I'm just going to take the other two and put them right next to yours.
Yep.
and we're just going to go.
Yep. And then suddenly the opponent's like, oh God, he's putting his crates on mine. I'm going to put this one all the way on the other side of the board. But they've already put two together, so now three are together, and now you have to fight over them.
Yep. I love this. Is so good. It's so good. But yeah, so, you know, we've gone through all six of these objectives, and I know, you know, I'm sure you guys are having questions as you guys are listening to this, and we are all available to do our best to answer the questions. Read the documents. I know that we're going to be having them hosted and kind of hanging out on Tim's website. Am I right about that?
Yeah, so he's more than happy to host them for us. NationalTabletopGaming.org.
To get that right. And then also, we're currently working on video examples for each objective, and those are going to be hosted on the Gold Squadron Podcast YouTube page. So they're sped up games, and it's a couple of us commentating with some graphics and just saying, all right, this is where things score, these are good ideas, these are bad ideas, what happened. And we just really look forward to sharing this with you all once it's all ready. And I know we've been anticipating it a lot. Ryan, you've been hyping it. I've been keeping it hush hush just because it's like, I know I would just let something slip. So I've just been quiet about it.
And this is like, again, this is something we're very, like, I'm so pumped about this. Like, I'm going to do everything I can. Like these files will also be available on the Minoc Facebook file page as well. Definitely go to nationaltabletopgaming.org that'll be the hub for it specifically. Like, we're going to be having two options available to print these out. You'll have full page printouts, but I'm also designing tarot cards that you can either print out, and they're double sided that you could, you know, print out and cut out, or you could go to something like Make Playing Cards and have them make them if you are like a store owner, or if you want to give it to your TO or something like that, or have them as like a small reference in your own kit. So those will be kind of the same ideas like IA's mission cards. So we're trying to make a lot of really good, well-designed elements for this so that it's really easy to run a tournament under this format, a kid tournament or whatever. And we're going to make a forum post on it too, Dion.
Oh yeah. I mean, we're going to blast it out. We're going to make it big. Everybody's going to hear about it. And another use for those cards that I really like is it's a perfect way to randomize what, yes, what you're going to play. So you just shuffle them up, pick the one on top and go.
Yeah, exactly. So one side will have deployment rules, another side will have summary and objective rules. Travis, can I get your, like, kind of, since we're coming to a close, as somebody who wasn't really involved in all this, is this something that would interest you? Like, if you came in and you saw that, like, this was an upcoming tournament, or let's say, like, in a magical hypothetical world, this is something FFG adopted and ran a store champ like this, would this interest you as a player?
Actually, yes. So I don't know how on the record I am, but a lot of people that know me know that I usually don't really like alternate formats. I don't like the 77 plus. I don't really care for escalation. I don't care for pirate tournaments. It's just not my gig. I actually enjoy 100 point dogfights, but one of the things that has been bothering me is the kind of optimum strategy to kind of hit and run and then run and run some more. So this actually seems really interesting. I'm actually surprised at how interested I am, to be honest, since I didn't know what I was getting into. I kind of expected to be about neutral because I usually don't like this kind of stuff. I actually find a lot of the meta strategy on these objectives based on, like I said, just timing of crates, moving crates, timing of actions, my considering I got excited about trajectories, throwing bombs into your little, trying to get to my shuttle. I was very excited for that for a minute. I'm back off that. I'm surprisingly intrigued by it. So yeah, I actually would kind of be more excited if they did kind of adopt something along these lines. Yeah, I think so.
And I think that's huge, you know, Travis, for someone like you said, like you who you're into the tournament scene, and pretty much you've been on record saying, I only go out for tournaments. I can't make league night. I'm there to play tournaments, right?
That's absolutely. I play X-Wing like outside of this maybe once a month, and it's almost always some sort of major tournament. I don't actually play kit nights. I haven't got any kits from the last three kits.
Right.
So I think that's a testament to the work we've done, gentlemen. So high five to yourself and us.
Another final note kind of I'll say is that because the way we'll have a tournament, kind of a rough tournament structure sheet, guidelines as well included. And because of the, once we get to like a top cut, whatever your top cut is, it's the objectives kind of reset in the cut and they're randomized again. So if you have a squad that's only really great against four objectives, like if you kind of go into this thinking, all right, if there are six rounds or five rounds and I can make the cut with three of them, I'm amazing at two, I'm decent at one, I punt against, you are a little bit playing with fire in the top cut because you could draw the one that you punt against. So if you don't have a squad that's decently well-rounded and can maybe play in all of these a little bit, and then that's the risk, the calculated risk you have to take, because in a cut, you could just get the draw, make it a bad objective draw, and that's your fault, kind of quote unquote your fault, because you didn't you decided that in the squad construction phase you weren't going to worry about crate carriers or freight fight or whatever.
Right. And I have last little closing thought. Travis, I'm surprised that we got your buy-in. I was very much expecting a hesitant, I'll give it a shot. And only because I'm friends with you guys. But
that's what more I'm importantly to give you, by the way.
Yeah. The thing about standard X-Wing is when you buy a core set of X-Wing, it comes with the standard rules in it. Like you get the scenario fight, you get the dogfight rules. So everyone that goes to play a game of X-Wing, like if you go to your game night store, has like consented to playing that game, right? That's a game they're willing to play because by virtue of showing up, they want to play it. So in all of these objectives, there's a lot, like, there's not a lot of rules. Hopefully there's not a lot of rules. We tried to change as little as possible and basically add one new rule to the rule set that just says you have to fight your opponent. The end game for all of these objectives is just, you can't castle, you can't points fortress, and you can't run for time. Yeah, so I'm very much hoping that the rule changes that we made are small enough that everyone that enjoys X-Wing also enjoys this. And please keep in mind, these are designed from a competitive standpoint first and foremost, which means I'm hoping, because I mean we've all been to like a casual league night where it's like, hey, we're gonna try this horribly unbalanced, like fun, but not actually like long-term competitive sustainable format. Whereas this, we like by design, we're going for that. That's the point. So I'm hoping that we avoid some of the, objective side tournament mission structure. I'm super out. Those are always terrible. And it's not that they're always terrible, but there are competitive players with that mindset of, I'm not interested in this because usually it's not well thought out as a competitive format.
Right. And yeah, we are looking at the future of this. We already have a couple of them in the chamber, kind of we're putting some finishing touches on, and we'll put out our, what do you want to call it, a second expansion when we finish, maybe another six.
Ryan made me take the epic ships out.
It's true. I mean, we had one with epic ships, and as amazing as, you know, it's a very fun scenario, but for a competitive event, it was just a little much because we didn't want to have everyone need a
bring around epic ships.
Yeah, bring your own epic ship. But it is one that we're working on that you could, if you know, you run a tournament and you consent and the game store consents or whatever, that you could swap in there once we kind of tweak them a little more.
Yeah, and print out paper for it or something, because let's be real, we all can't carry a raider around every tournament. It would get out of control quickly.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that, gentlemen. look for all those resources. We're going to be posting PDFs everywhere. We're going to be making posts on every forum, Reddit, sub forum. Share it. Let's have fun. Let's build this up. And who knows? Maybe we might get FFG's attention, Ryan, like you were talking about.
Well, Max has been quoted on the Scum and Villainy podcast saying, like, we want the community to make, you know, formats. We love that they're making alternative formats. Like, and one of the reasons we did this, we took, you know, we're three podcasts that have, you know, listeners, and we're hoping to make enough of a push on this that enough people kind of buy in, decide to play this and give it a try, that maybe we can influence the game a little bit. Maybe FFG sees that, wow, we have, like, this is all over our forums. Everybody's talking about this. Maybe this is something we should consider doing. And at the end of the day, if we can get competitive formats where you can't castle, you're forced to engage, you can't point fortress, and you can't run away, I think that's good for the game.
And then additionally, the other thing I really love about what we created here is that someone who has never heard of this could come in to your league night with whatever ships they have, and somebody say, hey, we're doing this thing, you want to play, read the card, and just jump in.
Right.
There's no need to adjust your squad. Oh, this, you know, X, Y, and Z. I mean, minus the three cards that we've banned, which are very rare, 99% of the time, it's going to be fine. We're not, you know, changing core rules. I'm super excited.
Me too. There's some, like, again, it's the squad diversification of the whole thing is what I love the most. Like you said that, like, 4XZ, like 2Bs, an X and a TLTY is super playable in this. Like you can run, like it'll feel like you can run original trilogy ships and they can still be good. Like you're not just going to get dumpstered because that's what you're flying.
They might even be like tier S plus with flight assist. You can do some crazy things with X-Wings that can boost on the first turn when you can guarantee your opponent's not in front of that objective.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like B-Wings with that, you know, the barrel rolling and just like their the tankiness, when your opponent has other things that they need to focus on other than just nuking your B-Wing, they're super solid.
Love it. Are we ready to close it out, gentlemen?
We are ready.
I have one shout out, if that's okay.
Shout it out, sir.
So we started this, and I mentioned earlier, we started in August. Our local league over at Atomic, which is where Crate Cup is, those guys have been helping us test it since September. We've run it since September as our just official league that we've been running. So I'm going to try to put together like a quick little credits as just like a massive props and thank you to everybody that's helped us test and give feedback. Like almost all the feedback that we got basically went not, you know, unchanged verbatim into the rules, but basically everybody had really good, intelligent things to say, like, hey, this was fun, this wasn't fun, this was balanced, this wasn't balanced. And we were able to get almost all of that stuff put in. So just huge thanks to everybody that contributed. Like it's a large set of people that have been working on it for a long time.
Yeah, shout out to D for running our league for September, October. We ran these objectives for those leagues, and every week it was another random objective. So we got four games in with an objective every week, and that was at Game Empire. And same thing, a lot of those guys like did a great job giving us feedback, saying what they liked, what they didn't like, what was working, what wasn't working.
And shout out to my guys at Pastimes who, you know, we had the option for our league. This is, you could play either dogfights or objectives. So we did that. We held the tournament. Thank you to, I'm going to shout out Ben Baker. He's the one who helped us figure out, hey, Heroes of the Resistance Han is not a good idea.
Especially with Courier Droid now. Oh my God. Oh God,
that's not, no.
Yeah. So yeah, that's awesome. So let's close this out. So for Ryan, Chris, and Travis the Johnson, my name is Dio Morales. Objectives team out.